Welcome to LOA Today.
I'm Jason.
With me are life coaches Monique Scott and Cindy Chavez. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today.
And indeed, we are happy you decided to join us today. Thank you for tuning in, if you're on the live stream especially. And sorry about that little echo there we have. We've got a mic turned on that wasn't supposed to be on. But that's okay. We get through these things. No big deal. And we are back doing more of our experiments based on the books by Pam Grout. And ladies, I have to say, so far, the experiments have been quite successful. We have gotten some very interesting results. But I'm going to be curious to find out what we have to report about last week's experiment. And I mean, Cindy was telling us before the show, she was all set. So I kind of think she's kind of like buzzing to go here. So yes. I'm going to go to you first, Cindy. What happened?
Well, I did too, because I missed that one week. Yes. So I missed the one that was the dude abides, I think is what it was called.
Right. Okay.
Basically not asking for anything specific, just asking for like a sign from the universe that kind of prove to you that, you know, maybe that you were being heard or that your thoughts were having an effect. And so I've been trying to figure out how I can explain what happened. But I've been on a certain spiritual track, I guess you would say, and that has to do with the recognition of all of us being one.
Okay.
And the flip side of that is our ego that really wants to be separate.
Right.
And so, you know, I've been studying this stuff for a long time, but just lately that's sort of been on my mind. And then the other night when I was awake, I looked at my phone and I decided to, you both probably know about tapping or EFT,
mm-hmm.
right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I used to manage a medical office for two naturopathic doctors back in the 1990 somethings. I can't remember when. And they taught me about EFT, like we used to use it with our clients, our patients. And at that time, I actually had like a hand printed copy of like how to go through all the set points and everything. And Gary Craig, who invented EFT or discovered it, however you want to put it, his website was like one page. Well, you know, a couple of decades went by and everyone started talking about tapping. And I was like, oh, I know how to do this, right? Because I had known for so long. And I go to his webpage and it's like huge and like Deepak Chopra's on there. And it's like, wow. And this was probably like maybe 10 or 15 years ago. So he's been in this game a long time. He's right. Very, very well known. And I have a little cataract in my left eye that is very small. And the doctor said, it's so small that we're not going to do anything about it. Well, of course, you know what I said, right?
Of course.
I'm going to do something about it. And so I have been doing certain things and it has not gotten any worse for like 2 years. It's still really barely there. It doesn't affect my vision, but I can tell it's there sometimes. And the other night I could tell it was there. And I decided, oh, I wonder if anyone has ever successfully used tapping. Well, I know they have, right? Because they use tapping on everything. So I started searching, and I don't know what I searched. I might have searched EFT cataracts or something, but this page came up. The second return in my search was Gary Craig's page. He's the founder of the whole EFT movement. So I went and looked. Well, lo and behold, I know this is a very long story, but he has a completely new modality that he calls optimal EFT. It does not include tapping.
Hmm.
I will not tell you all about it because he has a free ebook that you can just go read it yourself.
Fine.
But as I'm reading it, because I read it in an hour or so, right? I just started reading it. He's talking about the ego. He's talking about us all being one. He's talking about all these things. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I've been studying and talking about to everyone. He uses this phraseology in there for part of it. He talks about, he gives you a vision of a bridge.
Okay.
And he says on the other side of that bridge, there's no ego and everything is one. But here where we are on this side of the bridge, and so he's talking, he's kind of making this analogy of taking some steps toward that place, right? So I thought it was a beautiful picture. And the next morning I wake up and I say, okay, today's the day. This was Saturday. Like Saturday, today's the day where I'm going to do the, I got 48 hours and I need to have some kind of a sign. So every day I draw cards because I'm a card reader, and I draw a tarot card and a playing card because I read playing cards, and a Lenormand pair because I also read that. Every day I do this, and I just look at it and I just ponder what it means. Well, the first card I drew was the universe. The second card I drew was from a playing card deck called the Playing Card Oracles, and it was the Six of Clubs, and in that deck it's called the Bridge. And the Lenormand pair I drew was the self and the coffin. So the death of the ego, the bridge to the universe. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. But I realized it's subjective. I could make these cards mean whatever I want, right? So I go through the rest of the day, and references to ego death, to the universe, and to bridges were like so everywhere I looked. On my email, there's like a subject line talking about crossing a bridge, and it has nothing to do with any of this, but it was just like everywhere. And so finally at some point I said, okay. Like, I'll get it. Okay. So then the second one was green cars and yellow butterflies. And yesterday was my day to do that because I forgot about it. So I said, oh gosh, I don't have 48 hours. I got to do this in 24 hours. And I'm telling my husband about it. I'm not even out of bed yet. I'm like, oh, today's the day. This, I have to focus and see how many green cars and yellow butterflies I see. Okay. So I pick my phone up right after that and I open Instagram. And it's a screenshot that someone's posted of a yellow butterfly, and it says, and a whole story about their mother telling them they would come back after they had passed, that when you see a yellow butterfly, it's me. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I just said this out of my mouth. I opened my phone. There's the yellow butterfly story. So then it starts pouring down rain. I mean, the kind of rain that you're not going to go outside. Like, it was dark as night in my house. It was pouring rain. And so I made this comment. Well, I don't know if I'm going to see any green cars or any more yellow butterflies because no one is going outside today. So I walk to the back door with my husband. He's leaving for work, and there's no umbrellas in the mudroom except for this one that my father gave me before he died. May he rest in peace. And I said, here, just use this. Well, it's broken once and Scott's fixed it once already. And he said, I'm not using that thing. I don't want to break it. It's sentimental. And I said, no, just use it. And I took the little winder off, you know, to open it. And we realized that the panel that opened of fabric right there, it was just covered with yellow butterflies.
Oh my.
Well, there are some more yellow butterflies for you. And I went, oh my gosh, can you believe this? Put the umbrella back. He left. I came over to my Facebook group, and it was the new moon yesterday. So I told them I was going to read cards for them. I picked a specific deck that has very kitschy pictures from 1950s kind of style, crazy stuff on it. And I'm reading cards for them, and I pull a card, and it's got a picture of a green station wagon on it.
Oh my goodness!
And I was like, the green car showed up anyway. It's like pouring down outside. I could look out my window and not see the traffic. It was raining so hard. So I got two yellow butterflies and a green car on a very stormy day.
Well done. That's really good. Yeah, I love that. I have to say my story isn't quite as involved in that as that. You have a lot more detail than I've got, but I will tell you this. I realized after the show, I forgot to even ask for butterflies or anything like that. All I focused on was the car part. I barely even focused on the car part. I mean, I did it because we were doing the show, but quite honestly, I was so involved in the back of my mind with what's going on with the gardening business, because this is the busiest month of the year.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and it's insane. And so literally, I mean, doing the show is my break. That's my, oh, I get to take a breath time. And then afterwards, like right back to it again. So during the show, I made the intention and then completely forgot about it because I was so wrapped up in the minute by minute of what it's like to, you know, to deal with running a gardening business in May. Now, having said that, I was concerned last week that I wouldn't see any because I so rarely even get outside. I know that sounds strange for somebody in the gardening business, but I don't do the gardening. But trust my customers know, our customers know they don't want me in the garden because I don't have the green thumb. All of our gardeners have it. That's why they're out there and I'm in the office. So I was concerned, but actually I do get out to, you know, run errands too. I'll, you know, take tarps around and tools and supplies and fertilizers and all kinds of stuff. And so those are my opportunities. And I did the very first time I went out there, I was looking for beige cars, remember? And then the really hard ones was I was looking for a beige Tesla and I was seeing beige cars right off the bat. So it was a success. I found out also doing a little research that Tesla doesn't make beige cars. So that one was going to be a bit of a reach. You had to have somebody. Yeah.
And no one's going to come out and go for Tesla and say, you know, honey, we should paint it beige.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I mean, I went through every year that the Tesla has come out, not a single beige car in any of them. The closest one was a cream, and I'm not sure I can really count cream as beige. So I'm afraid I had to say that one didn't quite work out. But it was an interesting experiment anyway. How'd it work out for you, Monique?
Well, interestingly enough, I did see two black Infinities. However, I don't know if you guys are into cars, but if you are a car enthusiast, then this particular car you like, then you know it started off when I first noticed that it was the G35. Then mm-hmm. they changed it to the G37. Then it became the Q60, what it is, I mean, maybe for the past 2 or 3 years, right? And that was Cinco de Mayo, was last Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up going to dinner with my daughter. We're standing outside waiting on a table because it's packed, of course. And I look over to my right and what's right across from where we're standing. It's a black on black, but it was a G37. Because I know the car so well, I knew it wasn't a 2020 or a 2021. So I was like, okay, that means I'm getting closer, right?
That's
so
true. Absolutely.
I know I'm going to see it. The very next day, what do I see? Another black on black G37. It wasn't the same car because their wheels were different. You know, their spokes or whatever was different. But that's as close as I came. But I figured, hey, it's getting close. So, I mean, I don't consider it a complete wash because it is the car, right?
I call that a win.
Not the year. Right. And it did happen within the 48 hours. So.
Right. That's the thing too, is we gave it such a small window.
Yeah, we did.
I can't even say that I had some big faith about it, right? Because it was raining so hard. I was like, well, you know.
Right.
And then lo and behold, so yeah, I call it a win. And you know,
yeah, me too.
I saw a picture of a car. I'm counting it.
Right.
I think it definitely
is. It's so rare that I see that car in black. It's so rare that I actually see that car. Like I don't see it every single day, not like a Toyota Camry or something, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But to see that and to see it in black and for them both to be G37s, which is the body style right before they changed it, right? I was like, okay. You know,
definitely.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that definitely counts. It's an interesting point.
It's just showing us that our awareness is open to see things that would normally be filtered out.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I say it's a win. And while I'm surprised that you don't have like, I don't know, the yellow butterflies aren't showing up everywhere, like on, I don't know, on products or marketing things for gardeners, right?
Yeah.
Well, I could show you our logo, which does have a yellow butterfly on it.
I'm going to count it. I don't know.
I mean, it was there all along, but I'm willing to count it if you are. It's okay with me.
Right.
Part of the experiment, I think, is for us to realize that the things are there all along.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, all the things that we think we're not seeing showing up, they're actually there. And when we open our awareness, we start noticing them. So I, winner, winner, winner. Yeah.
Yeah. So we all won, right? We all
I think so.
Manifested.
Where do we win?
And I like the fact that we're doing this because you were specifically looking for one particular model. It wasn't just, you know, Infinity Black on Black. It was one particular model.
Yeah.
And you could have gotten stuck on that. And I say that because people often get stuck. Well, I didn't get exactly what I wanted. You know, I didn't pull off a Neville Goddard. Neville Goddard's stories always got exactly what they wanted, right?
Right.
You know, and I didn't get that. Well, what's wrong? Well, we didn't see it that way. We thought of it as what was right.
Yeah.
I think it's a really important thing to point out. I mean, actually, Dean and I were doing psychic experiments. That's what we're doing on Tuesdays. We were doing another one yesterday, another group of them. And the point that he always makes is we don't take any of the results seriously. In other words, if we say that, you know, the card that we're trying to guess has blue on it and there's no blue on it, we don't say, oh, I got it wrong. We say, yes, I got it wrong. I get so excited about it. In other words, you change the vibe about it so you don't feel down about the whole thing. And I think it's really an important thing. You didn't hit the bullseye. God, you hit the edge of the bullseye. What more do you want?
I like the perspective.
I had a friend once that told me, and I didn't think she was into any of this stuff, right? And she, it was back maybe 5-6 years ago when I was writing a blog really consistently, and she had read this blog post, and we talked about it later, and she said, you know, she said that she had been looking for a house, and she has like a master's degree in library science or something. And she was looking for a place to rent, and she found this apartment, and and she loves gardening, and it had a garden and a library in this little apartment. And she said, can you imagine? And then she called about it, and they said, oh, we just rented it to someone else. Uh-huh. And her immediate response was, I'm getting closer.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I was so ready for her to say, oh, I was so disappointed. You know, she said, and I was so happy. I said, I'm getting closer. And I was like, that's stellar response right there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that.
And it means that she's likely to get it. She's likely to get exactly what she's looking for because she adopted
that. You know, and I want that to be my response when something kind of works out, but not exactly. I want to be like, I'm getting closer. Yeah.
Well, aren't you the one who refers to driftwood?
Yes.
Yeah, that's your thing, right?
It's Florence Scovel Shen.
That's right.
She tells a story about a woman that, and you know, she was writing back in the 40s, I think. She tells a story about a woman that wanted a new set of dishes, and someone brought her over some plates that were like chipped and cracked. And she had the response of, oh, yeah, great. You know, I ask for a new dishes and I get this stack of cracked plates. You know, great, wonderful. And Florence Scovel Shen was like, no, this is driftwood. This is like when sailors are out at sea and they're very, very far from the shore that they can't even see the shoreline. When they start seeing driftwood and birds, they know they're getting close to land. So she said, you're getting close. Same exact thing, right? It's like you're getting closer.
Yeah.
Driftwood. And so I tell people that too. It's like if they're looking for a partner or a job or something, and sometimes they start focusing on relationships, they start focusing on new career opportunities, and then they'll come back and say, oh, you know, it's happening for everybody but me. My next door neighbor got a new job. My sister got a boyfriend. You know, it's like everybody, and it's like, that's the driftwood. So celebrate those things because at one point you weren't noticing at all. Now you're noticing when it happens for other people. Mm. So your awareness is opening. So that's a celebratory moment, right?
It is. And it genuinely, legitimately is too. I mean, I think probably our first reaction is to say, oh, all right, I got to celebrate it because I want to keep my vibe up. But it really is a legitimate result coming in. And it's a result that's saying, hey, you're close. This isn't just a little game. You're close. You're like within spitting distance of it.
Yeah. You know, so. I like to think of it as the I'm next, right?
Yes.
For everybody else, I'm next.
Right. I like that.
Right. Perfect. It's like you're in line.
Yeah.
And the person in front of you just got the thing and you're like, I'm next.
Yeah. I'm celebrating this because I know mine is right around the corner.
Yes, absolutely. That's a vibe lifter right there all by itself.
Yeah.
So we're not doing the Pam Grout experiments in order in the books. And actually, there are two books that we can be drawing from, although so far we've been drawing from the E-squared book. We're kind of selectively jumping around, deciding what we want to do each time. And we have selected an appropriate, we think it's an appropriate topic for this one. Cindy, are you going to be our reader today?
Yeah, I'll read. It's in the print copy of the book. It's on page 89. It's out of the Pam Grout book, E Squared. It's called The Dear Abby Principle. Your connection to the field provides accurate and unlimited guidance. It starts with a quote. I've often wished that when struggling with a decision or a dilemma, that the clouds would part and a cosmic Charlton Heston type voice would invite us to the second floor where the librarian of life would sit with us for several hours, patiently answering all of our questions and giving direction. It's a Henriette Ann Clouser, author of Write It Down and Make It Happen, or Clouser, I think it is. Very small print.
Clouser is what I see.
You know, sometimes when I'm, and you may do this too, Monique, when you're coaching someone, sometimes when I have someone that's asking for something or is uncertain about how to manifest a certain thing or ask for a certain thing, I have them try to manifest information, right? Ooh. Like start looking for information then. That reminds me of this. It says the premise, inner guidance is constantly available. There's never a time, never has been, never will be, when you can't get inner assistance for anything. Relying on any other decision-making tool is asking for trouble. The monkey mind, a Buddhist term for the distractible rattle, buzz, buzz, what should I do, what should I do, was never designed to solve problems. It's like using a pair of fingernail clippers to cut the lawn. Yet that's where most of us get our guidance. From a left cerebral hemisphere that's prone to misjudgment, faulty interpretations, and major fabrications. The conscious mind was designed for just two things, to identify problems and formulate goals. Anyone harnessing the mind properly would use it to define a problem or set an intention and then quickly jump back, Jack. That's it. That's all the cerebral cortex is good for, planting seeds. But instead, the conscious mind decides to get involved, to weigh the pros and cons, to come to rational decisions, gut feelings be damned. No sooner does the conscious mind define the problem or set the intention than it begins the yammer, the on and on about how big the problem is and why it's not likely to get solved anytime soon and how that intention sounds cool, but geez, I've been there, done that, and it sure as heck didn't pan out last time. Suffice it to say, this spin doctor in the brain is not your best resource. It judges, distorts reality, and causes unnecessary emotional distress. Let's say Jane uses her conscious mind to create the intention of improving her relationship with her husband. Perfect. Great job. Except that instead of pulling back and letting the intention flower, instead of temporarily shelving the conscious mind and turning to a source that could really offer some assistance, Jane's conscious mind begins creating rational conclusions, begins considering options. Before long, it's screaming, "Don't get me started." And from there, the cacophony of voices begins to sound as discordant as a band of rock star wannabes jamming in their parents' garage. My relationship with my husband is a charade. My husband is needy and lazy. I'll never get what I want. In other words, the conscious mind starts interpreting. The problem is it can't see past its nose or past the preordained decisions it made before it was old enough to know better. The results can be messy, capricious, and cruel. A better solution is to use those fingernail clippers for what they're designed for, put them back in the medicine cabinet, and get out a tool that's better equipped for mowing the lawn. Inner guidance. Once you get the hang of it, you'll find it's extremely reliable. Plus, its answers are far more peaceful, instinctive, and responsive to all the unpredictable factors that the conscious mind can't begin to understand. Inner guidance comes in many packages. I have no idea what the source of my inner voice is. This is a quote from D. Patrick Miller, founder of Fearless Books. The quote says, I have no idea what the source of my inner voice is. I certainly do not believe it's the voice of Jesus Christ or a dead ancestor with a quavery Irish brogue or a high-ranking Pleiadian sending me psychic data packets from a spaceship, although that last notion would be especially fun. Sometimes inner guidance comes completely unbidden. Like the night I was fretting about my newborn daughter's 106-degree temperature, mm-hmm. I was pacing the floor with Tasman in my arms, frantic with worry, completely baffled as to how to bring the raging fever under control. It was around 3 a.m., and while my friends always say, call me any time, night or day, probably even mean it, I couldn't bring myself to do it. Instead, I walked back and forth across our little apartment. Suddenly, a voice of startling clarity surfaced in my mind. It said, I didn't give you this great gift just to take it away. I knew at that moment all would be well. Sometimes inner guidance offers messages as distinct as those eight-ball fortune-telling toys. My friend Darlene had what at the time seemed like a rather foolish vision. She felt guided to apply for a music director position at her church in North Carolina. Sounded good, except for one small detail. She had absolutely no musical training and could only play the alto sax badly. Sure, she loved to sing, but loving to sing and getting a team of musicians to play instruments and singers to create harmony are two different record albums. Her conscious mind started to spin doctor. Darlene, you're just plumb nuts. Why would God or anyone else, for that matter, want you to lead a music team? So she agreed to give it one last shot, a shot from half court, no less, after which time she reassured herself she'd file the vision where it probably belonged, in the local dumpster. She made the following bargain with her inner guidance. If you really want me to lead the music team, have me run into either the minister, the board president, or the pianist by the end of today. Since it was Monday and church was already sealed and delivered for that week, she figured she was safe. After all, she worked all day and the odds of running into one of those three people in her neighborhood were next to zilch. On the way home from work, she stopped for groceries. She walked up to the checkout line where she heard a voice. Yoo-hoo, Darlene, what are you doing here? It wasn't an ethereal voice from the deep, like the reassuring voice that comforted me at 3 a.m. It was the voice of Mary Jenkins, board president, who was waiting in line ahead of Darlene. The point is that guidance comes in all packages. For many years, just before he went to sleep, Napoleon Hill, author of the classic Think and Grow Rich, would call an imaginary council meeting of Ralph Waldo Emerson, Thomas Paine, Thomas Edison, Charles Darwin, Abraham Lincoln, Luther Burbank, Henry Ford, Napoleon, and Andrew Carnegie. As chairman of this imaginary cabinet, Hill was able to ask questions and get advice. After some months of these nighttime proceedings, Hill was astounded that the appointees on his cabinet developed individual characteristics. Lincoln, for example, began arriving late, then walking around in solemn parade. Burbank and Payne often engaged in witty repartee. These experiences became so realistic that I became fearful of their consequences and discontinued them, Hill admitted in Think and Grow Rich. Like many people who receive unusual inner guidance, Hill was reluctant to admit to his nightly council meetings. But he did say this, quote, while the members of my cabinet may be purely fictional, they have led me into glorious paths of adventure, rekindled an appreciation of true greatness, encouraged creative endeavor, and emboldened the expression of honest thought, end quote. Inner guidance can come in any package you're open enough to hear. Some of us need a big whack on the side of the head. Others are more like Gary Renard, author of The Disappearance of the Universe, who with his extremely open mind got guidance from a pair of ascended masters who showed up one night while he was watching TV. Michael Beckwith, before he became a powerful New Thought minister at the Agape International Spiritual Center near Los Angeles, saw a vision of a scroll unroll that read, Michael Beckwith to speak at the Tacoma Church of Religious Science. When the Tacoma pastor called saying, hey, Michael, we'd like you to come speak at our church, Michael said, I know.
I love it.
We put our inner guidance on the no-call list. One of the main functions of formalized religions is to protect people against a direct experience of God. That was a quote from Carl Jung. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most of us have restricted the guidance we'll let in. We've decided that neon signs, telegrams, and sealed letters from God are okay. but everything else is, well, just a bit too frightening. Hell, we'd be scared witless if a scroll unrolled in front of us or an ascended master stepped in front of the TV during an episode of Mad Men. Our neural pathways have said, ah, not me. I'm not up for that. If some angel showed up at the foot of our bed, we'd probably call the police. It has to be challenging for our inner guidance. How would you feel if someone asked you a question and then turned his or her back, ignoring everything you said? We're like five-year-olds with our fingers in our ears going, la, 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 la. You wouldn't just pick up your phone when it rings, start talking loudly. You'd say, hello, and listen to the person on the other end of the line. Here we are accusing the higher force of not giving us clear guidance, and we're the ones with our damn phones off the hook. When Neil Donald Walsh first sat down with a pen in his hand and some tough questions in his heart, he was shell-shocked when a voice he presumed to be God answered back. Do you really want to know the answer, or are you just ranting? Walsh, who somewhat hesitantly agreed to play along, said, well, both, and if you've got answers, I'd love to hear them. Where did we ever pick up the foolhardy notion that inner guidance was restricted to a lucky few? A lot of it goes back to those myths we believe about God, that he's oh so mysterious and only call on Sundays. The part that was left out is that our inner guidance is reliable and constantly available. It's there anytime you choose to listen, same as CNN is on anytime you decide to switch on the TV. It's that reliable. And you are free to put it on the spot, to demand clear answers now. Then it says, anecdotal evidence, and it's a quote from Martha Beck. No matter how much evidence you have, over time, you tend to block out experiences that aren't normal.
I want to interrupt. I mean, I want to continue with this, but I want to interrupt for a moment and say I kept raising my hand in the middle of that saying, yeah, I do that. Yeah, I do that too. Yeah, I do that. Yeah. I mean, it's embarrassing, but the simple fact is I've got, and I know most people do, but I've got this long history of complaining that I don't get inner guidance. Well, I do. I've gotten it at times. It's just that most of the time I'm not listening, which is, I mean, I do think I'm listening. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't take a moment and say, okay, I want to hear something, and then I don't get anything. But can I honestly say I'm open like 98% of the time? No, not even close. Maybe 1%. You know, I just block it most of the time, and I block it partly for the reasons that she gave, but also partly because I've developed a belief, a very strong belief over time that I don't get messages. And that's really why I block it.
Yeah. And I was thinking, I was just talking about this yesterday with someone, this idea that where people will be questioning, like, whether they really heard something or not, like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do and this and that. And the comment that I made, because they were talking about a church kind of setting, and I said, you know, and a belief in God and this and that. And I said, where did we ever decide that God was like so mysterious that he didn't really want us to find the answer, or that it's like a big puzzle and he's like, you know, that God is like keeping it a secret from us, and it's like messing with our head. You know, so I never, even when I was involved in organized religion, I never had that thought. It seemed ridiculous to me that if this supreme being that we're talking about, that knows everything and is everywhere, right? It is like playing some kind of head game with me where it's not going to give me the answer to something and just watch me squiggle and squirm about it. I don't believe that's the case. And I think it's because the answer really is within us. And then, like you said, we just don't listen because so many times we're looking outward, right? We're looking on the outside for the answers. We're looking for someone else to give it to us.
Well, I was also realizing very often, not all the time, but very often when I'm demanding answers, I'm also angry at that moment in time. And when I'm angry, I shout the question out mentally, you know, mm-hmm. and then I sit there with like this burn going, okay, I dare you to try to answer this. And of course, I'm not going to receive anything in that moment. It's just not going to happen. All I'm going to get back is more reason to be angry. Like, oh God, but. I just don't seem to break that one. I don't know.
You know, sometimes sometimes when I'm coaching someone, I will ask them if their feet are flat on the floor.
Mm.
And the reason is, and I will ask them if they would make sure that their arms and legs are not crossed. And the reason is why, because I'm probably getting ready to tell them something pretty hard and I want them to be open.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be embodying openness. We don't do that if we're all curled up with our legs crossed and everything crossed around, right? And when you said you're usually angry at that moment, I thought to myself, the first thought that came to me is that, you know, when we're angry, we're constricted.
Yeah.
We're not open. Like, right? Not in an emotional way, not in a metaphorical way, not in a physical way. We're not embodying openness. We're not open to hearing. And so that makes so much sense to me. And it's probably true for so many people. I definitely know that there's times when I've been frustrated and angry, constricted,
sure.
and wanted some kind of guidance.
Yeah, but I wasn't willing to listen.
Oh, no, I don't want to listen. I just want to scroll to unroll in front of
this
me.
This is venting time. Don't you know this?
Where's the scroll? I don't remember your scroll.
Yeah, right. Where's the scroll? I agree with Pam in the book. I mean, if that scroll appeared in front of me, I'd probably go into a dead faint. Just like, where's that come from?
If an angel appeared at the foot of your bed, you'd probably call
right? Well, okay. I'm not sure that I call a place because I do have a little experience, not so much with an angel, but with having visitations at night. What I usually do is I wake Louise up and say, what the hell is that?
So you would just wake up Louise and let her?
Yeah, that's my solution.
This angel bothering me. Could you do
yeah. that? Can you make that angel go away, please?
Okay, so Pam Gout continues. Michael Beckwith, the guy I mentioned earlier, who had a vision of a scroll, there's the scroll, was looking up at a windmill one day. This is before he became a minister, when he wasn't completely convinced that his decision to pursue a godly calling was the right one. He said point blank, look, God, if you're listening, if this is what you really want from me, have that windmill point in my direction. Even though it was a windy day and the windmill was spinning very fast in the other direction, no sooner did he say that than the windmill stopped rotating on its normal axis and pointed straight at him. Of course, he'd already had one or two mind-blowing experiences. To put himself through school, this is back when he wanted to be a doctor, Beckwith sold drugs, just to his friends, of course. Since he was a gregarious, open kind of guy, let's just say his business flourished. His marijuana dealership grew to both coasts and convinced him that if he played his cards right, he could retire completely by the age of 24. But he knew something was off. His inner guidance kept prodding, giving him bizarre dreams, strongly suggesting there had to be a better way. He decided on his own to give up drugs, to follow that better way. He told all his friends that it was over. He was retiring. On his final drug deal, the one that would get rid of the last of his supplies, he was busted by federal agents. Now, keep in mind that not only did he have in his possession 100 pounds of pot, but he also had large sums of cash, guns, and hot cameras. Still, his inner voice told him, everything's going to be okay.
Ooh.
As he prepared for trial, his friends thought he was crazy. Why aren't you fretting, pacing the floor, thinking up strategies for getting out of this bad rap? They asked him. I was guilty, he says, but I was also assured by God that everything was going to be okay. By that time, he'd seen a grander vision. He went to trial. His attorney was Robert Shapiro, pre-OJ days, then just launching his career. Peaceful and believing that no matter what, he was loved and cared for by this very real presence. Sure enough, he got off on a technicality. And when the judge freed him with the comment that he never wanted to see him again, Michael knew that he never would.
Wow.
Sometimes the field of infinite possibilities even manages to get through to people who scoff at it. In 1975, Gerald Jampolsky, at a time, a successful California psychiatrist on the outside was falling apart on the inside. His 20-year marriage had ended. He was drinking heavily. He developed chronic disabling back pain. Of course, it never dawned on him to seek higher guidance. As he says, I was the last person to be interested in a thought system that used words like God and love. But nonetheless, when he first saw A Course in Miracles, the book I've mentioned a few times that teaches personal transformation by choosing love rather than fear, he heard a voice clearly tell him, "Physician, heal thyself. This is your way home." And of course, it was. Jampolsky was gone on to write many books. He lectures widely on the principles of A Course in Miracles, and he even started a center in Sausalito, California, for people with life-threatening illnesses. Immediate, direct guidance is available 24/7. But instead of paying attention, we taught ourselves the most unnatural habit of not listening. It's like the foreign exchange student who didn't grow up around technology and has no idea that the phone beside his bed could hook him up with that cute girl in his biology class. He thinks he has to wait until tomorrow to talk to her. It's like that overlooked space heater I mentioned in the preface. I don't think we read about it. Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. We've got a couple more pages till we get to the experiment, but this thought about not listening and this little example that she gave, you know, a foreign exchange student who didn't grow up around technology. That's a really interesting example, because it's not that he's consciously not listening, right? He just doesn't realize that this thing sitting there is the answer for him. And I think that, to me, is like the crux of this all, is that we do have guidance and we're looking somewhere else.
Right.
We have to wait to tomorrow when we get to class to talk to the person, right? It's like,
right.
I think it's outside of ourselves, and I'm really getting excited right now about what this experiment is going to be.
Well, I have to admit, I wanted us to do this experiment because this is a big issue for me. So in that sense, I'm kind of invertedly looking forward to this.
So she has a quote here from Woody Allen. "If only God would give me a clear sign, like making a large deposit in my name." When she was 25, actress Jamie Lee Curtis was hanging out in her recently purchased Los Angeles apartment with her friend Deborah Hill. Deborah, who had produced Halloween, the spooky movie that launched Curtis's career, had brought over the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine as a housewarming gift. They were flipping through the magazine and chatting optimistically about the end of Jamie Lee's most recent relationship when they saw a photograph of three men. Jamie Lee pointed to the man on the right, who was wearing a plaid shirt and a waggish smirk, and told Deborah, "I'm going to marry that man." She'd never seen him before and had no idea who he was, but something inside her told her he was the one. "That's Christopher Guest," Deborah said. "He's in a funny new movie called This is Spinal Tap. I know his agent." Jamie Lee, awestruck by this very clear churning in her gut, called the agent the next day, gave him her number, and told him to have Chris call if he was interested. He never called. Several months later, while at Hugo's, a popular West Hollywood restaurant, Jamie Lee glanced up to find herself staring straight at the guy from the magazine, who was only three tables away. He waved, as if to say, "I'm the guy you called." She waved back. She thought, interesting. Except a few minutes later, he got up to leave. He shrugged, waved, and walked out the door. Jamie Lee looked down at her plate, kicking herself for believing in something as stupid as inner guidance. But the next day, her phone rang. It was Chris Guest, and he wanted to set up a date. 4 days later, at Chianti Restaurante on Melrose, they met for dinner. By the time Guest left for New York to tape an episode of Saturday Night Live just over 1 month later, they'd fallen deeply and passionately in love. Soon after that, when they were talking on the phone, Chris said to Jamie, "I was out walking along Fifth Avenue today." "Oh, yeah?" Jamie said. "What'd you do there?" "Do you like diamonds?" he asked. They were married on December 18th, 1984, 8 months after Jamie Lee got that initial guidance. All right, so now we're going to talk about the method.
The method.
And she's got a quote from Michael Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park, that says, "Parting the Red Sea and turning water to blood, the burning bush, nothing like that was going on now, not even in New York City." So here's the method. In this experiment, we'll prove that the guidance received by Jamie Lee Curtis and others is not some weird Twilight Zone-like anomaly, but a very real and ongoing tool that all of us can use at any time. You will spend 48 hours expecting a specific, concrete answer to a specific, concrete question. It can be as simple as whether to adopt a new Siamese kitten, or as complicated as whether or not to take a job offer. Either way, give your inner guidance 48 hours to spell it out. But watch out. I tried this once and got fired. In retrospect, however, it was the perfect answer, maybe the only one I could hear to the question I'd asked. Is it time to launch my freelance writing career?
Wow.
Choose an issue that's troubling you, something that has a yes or no answer, something on which you're really confused and don't know what to do. I know you're thinking of something right now. Doesn't matter what it is. That issue will work. Look at your watch. Ask for a clear, non-debatable answer and ask for it to show up within the next 48 hours. It might show up immediately. It might take only a day, but within 48 hours, expect to have a neon sign of an answer. It's your job to set the intention and the time frame. The field of potential will do the rest. Stan, remember the cute former surfer from Esalen I mentioned in the preface? There's the preface again. We didn't read
it. There it is again. That's what happens when you read it out of order. That's the problem, but that's okay. We'll live with it.
Stan had lost his job. To make matters worse, his girlfriend of 3 years decided it was time to move on. Needless to say, he had some pretty serious decisions to make. First on the agenda, Stan decided, was to find a way to make some money. But he had no idea what he wanted to do. I reminded him there was a divine plan for his life, and that it would be revealed if he simply set the intention and a clear deadline. Stan said something like, "Hey, dude, if it's true you have a plan for my life, I could use a directional pointer. I don't have a lot of time, so by Friday morning, I want to know just what you have in mind for me." On Thursday afternoon, Stan was sitting in the hot springs with a man he'd never met. The man happened to mention he was opening a self-improvement center out in Pennsylvania's Laurel Highlands and was looking for someone to run the place. Stan immediately felt a buzz, and sure enough, less than 30 minutes later, he was offered the job, even though the sum total of his job experience at a self-improvement center was that of a cabin cleaner. So, the lab report sheet, the principle is called the Dear Abby principle. The theory is that your connection to the field provides accurate and unlimited guidance. The question is it really possible to get ongoing, immediate guidance? The hypothesis, if I ask for guidance, I will get a clear answer to the following yes or no question. And then there's a space for your question. The time is 48 hours, so you create a date and a time, deadline for receiving the answer. And then the approach says, all right, here goes. Okay, inner guidance. I need to know the answer to this question. You've got 48 hours. Make it snappy.
Make it snappy.
And then there's a quote from Albert Einstein that wraps up this chapter that says, man, surrounded by facts, permitting himself no surprise, no intuitive flash, no great hypothesis, no risk, is in a locked cell. Ignorance cannot seal the mind more securely. Mm.
Okay, I'm thoroughly scared by that comment, so I think I'll do this experiment.
Well, I'm reading, and when she's writing, well, you're thinking of it, you know it. I'm like, no, I haven't thought of anything yet. So I'm trying.
You know what's interesting? When you said that,
yeah,
that was the first thought that I had, and then I realized I was not telling the truth to myself.
Ah.
Because I told you guys that I don't remember if I told you during the show or before the show. How I had been dealing with an issue. I think I was telling you before the show. I think I told you, Cindy, and it was before Monique was able to connect in. And it's a question that I've been dealing with that involves basically a new business venture. Like I really need that in the middle of May, you know, running a gardening business. But it was a new business venture, one that it's not all that new, but it's relatively new for me. And I have a long history of doubts where new ventures are concerned. I've launched all kinds of stuff you know, and a lot of them don't work out, which is typical. That's the way it often works out with entrepreneurs. But I, as a result, I have this longstanding pattern that says, yeah, well, that one's not going to work. Yeah, well, that one's not going to work. You know, it's a very consistent thing. So I was feeling really kind of this about it just a few days ago. And I pulled out these cards. Now, these are cards that anyone who's a regular listener to the show will know that I've been using with Dean McMurray on the Tuesday shows when we do psychic experiments. And like I said yesterday on the Tuesday show, I haven't pulled this deck out in months, but because we're doing it for the show, okay, I pulled it out. And so it was just sitting next to me on the desk. And so I turned to it, I said, well, all right, I'll give it a shot. Let's see what the cards have to say about, you know, is this thing worthwhile? You know, should I actually pursue this thing? Is it gonna play out the way I wish it would play out?
Right.
So I pulled the cards out and I pulled a card after doing some shuffling and went to read the card and, you know, read the description in the book. And what the card was basically about relationships, which was not really related at all to what it was I was asking about. But it had one very poignant thought in it. And the poignant thought was, you're not trusting your intuition. I said, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. But it made it very clear. And it was right. It was absolutely right. I wasn't trusting my intuition. So, first of all, I know what the question is.
You ask the deck a question, and the answer is you should ask your intuition.
Yes, right. So my question is the same one, but this time I'm asking my intuition. I know what my question is. So even when I said I didn't know what my question was, yeah, I really didn't know. I just didn't want to go there because I was afraid to.
But that's awesome because it's exactly what we're talking about.
That's right. So,
even though it didn't answer your question, it gave you confirmation in advance of this experiment, right?
That's it did.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's part of the reason why I like the idea of doing this chapter today, because this chapter directly addresses this one little thing that's been going on for a long, long time. But I just need to shed. I need to let go of this stuff. I need to start trusting. Yeah, because I do. I've got plenty of experiences where my intuition, when I have followed it, have worked beautifully. I'm just not trusting it. And I got to learn to trust it. Now, I'm curious, Monique, because you have pretty clearly laid out in the stories you told about your own experiences, that you don't really have any trouble diving in. You don't have any trouble with the trusting part. So I'm curious, how are you experiencing this, the laying out of this experiment here? I mean, how is it coming across to you? What are you seeing in it?
Actually, I'm one, surprised, but not surprised that this came up. Because there is a nagging question.
Oh.
And I won't even say it's a nagging question. It's just something that's been rolling around in my mind that I have been wanting clarity about. But I just figured, you know what? I'm not going to ask about that. Whatever. Right? But in the back of my mind, I really do want to know, because it's so interesting that you mentioned in the book, she mentioned Pleiadians, right? What? My daughter tells me all the time, I'm so serious, y'all. I don't think my daughter really believes that I'm human. Cause she was like, you don't have the same, like, stuff like regular people do, right? So, for this particular question, Walt, and is it okay if I just go ahead and tell you guys what my question is going to be?
Yeah, sure.
So, and y'all are probably going to be surprised. But my question to God, universe, spirit, infinite intelligence, whatever, right? Is my question is, and I'm not sure, maybe Cindy, this is your field, so you can help me position the question. But what I really want to know is, am I supposed to get married or not?
Ooh.
And the reason why I'm asking that is because I think I've shared with you guys, I never saw myself getting married, having children, the white picket fence, none of that, you know. And when I see people who are in love, it warms my heart. Like, I totally love it, but I don't ever feel like, oh my gosh, that's what's missing in my life. I need it. I want it. Right. And so that's why my daughter tells me, Mom, you're not real. Now we're all grown on this, you know, and I'm a complete open book. I told China, my daughter, I said, if I think about sex twice a month, it's like, oh my God, I thought about it. Like, it's just not in my, honestly, it's just not in my awareness, but I also haven't been in a relationship for 3 years, and that doesn't bother me either. I'm so focused on what I want to do with my life, how many people I can serve. My service to the world is what's really important. So I'm like, God, am I supposed to be married? Should, is this something that I should be desiring? Like, is something really wrong with me? Because that's not really something that I want. If it happens, cool. But if it doesn't, I'm still good. So that's going to be my question. So I'm not sure, Cindy, if I'm posing that right to God. But
I mean, I don't want to restructure your question too much, but I want to point out that there are no shoulds. So, you know, so often our questions are just like this, right? Am I supposed to do a certain thing?
Right.
And I tend to ask questions like, how would it benefit me to do a certain thing? Or what would I gain from the experience? Or like you said, you're so focused right now on serving the world. So it's like, you know, the whole idea of balance, we focus on something and then we focus on something else, right? It's like not everything has to be perfectly layered, but I think that it's a great start to a question for this particular thing is like what, you know, it's supposed to be a yes or no question. So that's right. It's like maybe because here's the thing, you know how you said, well, I don't really care one way or the other.
Right.
Well, you will when you meet him.
I haven't been in love before. I mean, I've been engaged 4 times, just never got married, you know, so
maybe, you know, the question more of a yes or no question that we're supposed to be asking is like, will I get married within the next 12 months or will I fall in love and want to get married in the next, you know what I mean? A question that's
yeah. I'm going to go with that one. That's going to be my question within the next 12 months. I like that.
I like to put it out there like that, right? Because there isn't any right or wrong or should or shouldn't or whatever. I mean,
well, let me propose something because I mean, the experiment is actually supposed to be within 48 hours. And obviously that one's not going to be really easy to ask and believe that you can actually get the answer in 48 hours. So maybe something like, how about, will I get yes or no? Will I get some sort of indication in the next 48 hours as to whether or not the 12-month experiment is going to work out? Something along that line.
I think we're all on board with that. It's like, you know, we're asking the yes or no, not for 12 months, but in the next 48 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So somebody, I don't want to rewrite your question either. But
no, it's fine.
I'm just looking for a way to make it a 48 hour question.
The brainstorm. So three brainstorming here. That's good.
That's right. Okay. So
I don't know what I'm going to ask yet. So
I was going to ask you that. I mean, so I won't ask you.
Do you have yours, Walt?
Oh, I know what mine is. Yes. I'm not going to reveal it just yet on the show. I'll tell you this. If I get the answer and the answer is the one that I want, I'll tell you what the story is. If it's not the answer I want, I'll just tell you that I got the answer was no. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'll have to reveal my question when we come back because I don't know what it is yet. I do think it's going to have something to do with business, but I'm kind of in this liminal space of uncertainty about it. So it'll get clearer. I'll ask
everybody. Sounds good. Okay. Well, all right. We've got the intention set. We want to invite people who are listening to the audience in the podcast audience or listening to the live stream. If you want to be a part of it, by all means, be a part of it. Some of you might even want to send in to us via email or LOA Today app or whatever, what it is that, you know, you're experiencing. And we love that, you know, we'll make that part of the reporting that we do next week.
Yeah.
But we're on a good experiment. I like the way we've been choosing these. Yeah, we've been doing them out of order. Who cares? The main thing is we've been doing them in an order that I think is working for us. And I'm liking this order. This order, it feels very progressive the way that we're doing this. We're taking steps forward. So, yeah. Good selections, guys. I like this. All right. Well, then have a great week. Thank you very much to our podcast listeners. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Bye.